Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Pieper, who is the director of the Brookings Institution's Arms Control Initiative, where he focuses on arms control, Ukraine and Russia issues. He served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs, U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, and Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director for Russia, Ukraine and Eurasia on the National Security Council. In addition to Kiev, he had postings in London, Moscow, Geneva and Warsaw, as well as on the National Security Council. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Pieper.
Thank you for having me today.
And clearly, it's been extraordinary change in Ukraine. The idea you've had months and months of increasingly bloody confrontation resulting in recent sniper fire against the opposition, and then suddenly the Yanukovych disappears, the riot police disappear, melt into the night, Yanukovych disappears, and now you've got the opposition strolling through this vast, opulent, kind of tacky Disneyland that the kleptocrat embezzled. What do you make of it all?
No, it's been just a whirlwind in the last 4 days. On Thursday, Ukraine literally was on the brink of violent chaos with fighting going on. On Friday, Mr. Yanukovych and the opposition leaders negotiate a settlement. It moves very quickly. The first step called for in that settlement is a return to the 2004 Ukrainian constitution, and the Ukrainian parliament overwhelmingly approves that. Friday night, Mr. Yanukovych disappears. Yesterday, in Kyiv, the police are gone. The authorities are disappearing. You basically have the parliament with significant defections to the opposition from Mr. Yanukovych's party, the Party of Regions, approving a new speaker. That speaker today was appointed the acting president. They plan to appoint a new unity government, and people are still trying to figure out where Mr. Yanukovych is.
Well, apparently he's addressed television, speaking in Russian, presumably from the area close to the Russian border. But what do you make, though, of the idea that Yulia Tymoshenko, who has been released from prison, is certainly getting media attention? And I'm wondering whether that's out of the frying pan into the fire in terms of, I mean, she's a minor kleptocrat compared to Yanukovych, but her aide was busted for money laundering, presumably laundering her money. It would be a tragedy, would it not? This is the third post-Soviet revolution, is it not? And we one would hope it could finally turn in a positive direction.
Well, this is going to be, I think, one of the big questions for the next coming days and weeks. Ms. Tymoshenko should have been freed as she was from jail yesterday. The charges that put her into jail in 2011 were totally politically motivated, and the trial, by all accounts, was a total sham. But there is a big question. While she's been in jail, you've had three other political leaders, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who's basically managed her party while she's been in jail, Vitaly Klitschko, the former heavyweight boxer who heads his own party, and then Oleg Tyanibuk, who heads a right-wing party mainly based in western Ukraine. Those three have worked together actually fairly well during this crisis. And so the question is, how does that dynamic change with Ms. Tymoshenko back? And you also, though, it's interesting, looking at sort of just reactions that people are picking up on the streets, is there is a sense that you get from the demonstrators that, A, they may look to new political leaders. They may see this group as sort of part of the old, or at a minimum, they're going to have very high expectations for their performance. And there's even talk, for example, of continuing the demonstrations in central Kyiv until they have a degree of confidence that the new leadership is moving Ukraine in the direction that they would like.
So, Stephen Pieper, what do you think, though, is going on with Putin now? I mean, he, in effect, brought this on himself by forcing Ukraine into an either-or situation. It's either the EU or us, and he sort of bribed them with this $15 billion loan, which presumably is not going to be forthcoming, or at least the balance of it won't be. He sees things in the zero-sum terms, does he not? So he's likely to be the spoiler, isn't he?
Well, he has that potential. I think it's likely that that Mr. Putin will see this as a setback for his interests. He's been fairly clearly working over the last years to build a sphere of influence in the post-Soviet space. And if now a Ukraine with a new government begins to resume its course towards the European Union, that leaves a big hole in that sphere. So I think he is looking at ways to try to see if he can exert influence. And Russia does have levers. They showed last summer that they could cut off Ukrainian imports. They, as you said, it's unclear whether they will continue the $15 billion credit line. Will they reverse the gas price cut that they granted Ukraine back in December? So there's a lot of economic levers he has. And the unfortunate thing here is when you kind of step back, though, and ask, you know, if Ukraine draws closer to the European Union and has a trade relationship with Europe, the European Union is not NATO. And if that Ukraine still has a positive, constructive relationship with Russia, that shouldn't be seen as a threat to Moscow. But my guess is that Mr. Putin is playing a different game, and he will work those levers. The question is whether those levers will have much impact. You know, my guess is that this struggle for Ukraine is going to be settled first and foremost by the Ukrainians.
So is there a way, though, cure? I mean, my understanding is that not only is the country bankrupt, it's also spectacularly corrupt at every level. To get anything done, you've got to bribe people, and apparently that weighs on the Ukrainian people. And I've spoken to Ukrainians who've talked about trying to get, you know, young entrepreneurs trying to start a business, and they're refusing to pay bribes. They're trying to live like the Europeans in a kind of rule of law environment. Is it possible that they can be given an infusion of support and that the country could head in that direction?
Yeah, I'm hopeful on this. I mean, this crisis began 3 months ago when the Ukrainian government suspended the negotiation of the conclusion of an association agreement with the European Union. But it's changed since then, and I think what you have on the street are lots of people who are just tired of the authoritarianism, and they're tired of the corruption. I mean, when they look towards Europe, it's not just the attraction of EU living standards, but it's also that dull, boring, democratic rule of law, and I think people want that. I think there's also a recognition that they had a huge opportunity after the Orange Revolution back in 2004, and they missed that opportunity. So my guess is you're going to have a lot of people in Ukraine now saying, this is our second chance. We're looking towards the government that's now being formed to deliver on things, and very high on that list is going to be, we want an end to corruption. We're tired of this. It's going to be a difficult struggle because rooting out corruption is never easy, but my guess is that's going to be something that people are going to be watching very, very closely. And it will be, I think, spurred somewhat by these incredible pictures coming out of Mr. Yanukovych's estate just outside of Kyiv. And which really give, I think, a new definition to the term conspicuous consumption.
So, but when you talk about the failure of the Orange Revolution, a lot of that can be leveled at Yulia Tymoshenko, who was the prime minister, and she did nothing but fight with the president. It was totally dysfunctional, and she's not exactly without sin herself in terms of corruption. So it would seem to me that that would be, unfortunate if she made a political comeback.
Well, and this will be a question. I mean, my guess is that she wants to play a political role, but it's been interesting in just sort of watching Ukrainian blogs and the Twitter world is I think there are a number of people who are looking at her and saying, maybe her time has passed. Maybe it's time for new leadership here. But again, I think a lesson that any politician who wants to succeed in the coming months in Ukraine is going to have to take is that it's very important to be on the right side of the anti-corruption battle, because that's something that has been a big motivation for people that have been out in the streets through a very long, cold winter in Kyiv.
And as you were just saying, there are more and more evidence of the excesses of the kleptocratic Yanukovych family is going to come to light. So that will be exacerbating the, and reminding people of corruption. How though, is Putin going to handle the fact that his idea of an alternative to the EU, which involves Ukraine, Belarus, and Kazakhstan, looks pretty much dead in the water? Ukraine is a huge, important country. with tremendous resources. It's the breadbasket, et cetera. Russia trades a lot with Ukraine, and presumably they wouldn't be happy about losing that market.
Yeah, well, again, my hope would be that Putin would step back and say, look, Ukraine that's deepening its relationship with the European Union but still has a positive, constructive relationship with Russia, you know, that's not a threat. But my guess is that he's playing a different game here. And he will be tempted, I think, to use some of the economic levers he has to pressure Ukraine. The most worrisome thing would be were he to try to encourage separatist tendencies in the eastern part of the country. Although so far, it's interesting that even some of the regional leaders are now saying, look, you know, we may not be totally happy with what took place in Kyiv, but, you know, we still see a Ukrainian state. We're not talking about leaving. But it would be prudent both for the new government in Ukraine and I think for the United States and the European Union, which would like to see this new government succeed in divining a course that takes Ukraine down a democratic path that builds a stronger, more stable economy. But it would be prudent to think about how they would deal if Mr. Putin exercised some of the levers that he has at hand.
Well, apparently he had a conversation by phone with President Obama, and the relationship between the two was not particularly good. What is your understanding of – do you know anything about that conversation and whether they have any kind of working relationship at this point?
Well, the readout of the conversation seemed to be fairly positive and such. But the more important thing is going to be to watch and see the actions that Mr. Putin takes. Now, to some extent, for the last 2 weeks, he's been thoroughly distracted by the Sochi Games. Those are now over, and the question is, as he turns back to other business, my guess would be what to do about Ukraine is going to be at the top of his inbox. And we may get some indications in the next few days how Russian intends to respond. It was not positive that the Russian foreign minister yesterday was talking about extremists in Kyiv and some kind of a coup. That suggested a certain narrative has taken hold in Moscow with regards to what happened. But we'll just have to see what Russia plans to do about this.
But the Russian media propaganda, which is entirely controlled now that Echo's gone and the last non-governmental TV cable channel's gone, you know, they've really been beating the drum about these terrorists and fascists taking over. How are they going to walk back from that?
No, I mean, and this is one of the things that, to some extent, Mr. Putin may have created something of an expectation. And I think when Putin looks at what's going on in Ukraine, it's not just the question of his view or his vision of Russia as a superpower having a sphere of influence. Ukraine is very important from that point of view. But there's probably a strong domestic political element here, is that pulling Ukraine closer to Russia undoubtedly appeals to conservative elements in Mr. Putin's domestic political constituency. And he probably is looking for ways to avoid being seen as somebody who lost Ukraine. Now, I would argue that Ukraine was lost back in 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed and the Ukrainian country became an independent state. But there, unfortunately, are a number of Russians who are not yet reconciled to that.
So what do you think is going to happen to the billionaires, in particular Yanukovych's staunchest ally, the billionaire businessman, the richest man in Ukraine, Rinat Akhmatov?
My understanding is he's actually in London now. I think a number of people who are very close to Mr. Yanukovych have left the country and are waiting to see how the dust settles. Now, Akhmatov also was trying to position himself with a foot in both camps. I mean, he had been calling for a peaceful resolution of the crisis. He came out late, but he still came out with a criticism of the use of force. But I think he's trying to see what's going to happen and what the new government means for oligarchs who had been close to the previous regime.
So, but don't the public, and particularly the opposition, who pretty much have triumphed, at least in the western part of the country, don't they despise these guys?
They do, but I think one of the questions that they're going to have to sort out, and this will be one of the tough questions, is when you look back, how far do you go back in terms of righting wrongs that were done? And I, My guess would be it's going to be important to find a balance. I mean, I think there are some cases that were so egregious, there has to be some call to accountability. But it's also important that the new government not get so bogged down in sort of investigating and righting every wrong of the past 20 years that it loses sight of what its main function is, which is to return Ukraine to a sense of normalcy, to build the economy, reform the economy, and deal with some pretty pressing financial challenges that are coming, and then also to really institutionalize a more democratic form of government. So they're going to have to find that balance between looking at the past, but also addressing the problems that are going to be much more important for the country's future.
Well, I recently spoke with a Swedish diplomat who spends a lot of time in Ukraine and knows it well, and he was saying that the Yanukovych family, particularly Alexander, the former dentist, the eldest son, they have basically embezzled something as much as 6% of the country's GDP. They'll clearly, with all these pictures that you were talking about of the opulence that now the general public are going to be seeing, the way that they lived inside the palace walls, isn't there going to be a call for that national patrimony to be returned?
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the votes that was taken in the Ukrainian parliament today has nationalized or renationalized the estate that Mr. Yanukovych had, allegedly as private property just outside of Kyiv. And there will be that. And this is an area where Western countries can help. Because a lot of these people, including people fairly close to Mr. Yanukovych, I believe, parked their money outside of Ukraine because they were not fully confident in Ukrainian financial institutions. So a lot of that money is sitting in Western banks. And the question is, can the West help Ukraine identify that money and freeze it in those cases where money clearly can be traced back to, you know, this was stolen from the Ukrainian budget, return it to the Ukrainian budget and such. And that will require some good cooperation between the Ukrainians as they develop evidence. And apparently, along with everything else in the estate, they found a lot of paper, and they're going through a lot of documents to try to track things, including one receipt for $12 million in cash that was being shown around on the Twitter world yesterday. If they can track that and then work with Western investigating agencies, maybe they can free some of this money and arrange for its return back to the Ukrainian budget.
Well, just in closing, Stephen Pfeiffer, what's your feeling? Optimism that Putin won't, even if he is trying to be the spoiler, that have things moved too far in the direction against him?
I'm a lot more optimistic the last 3 days than I was earlier last week, where Ukraine literally was on the brink. I think Ukrainians now have charge of their fate. Russia certainly, as I said, will be tempted to try some levers, but I think Ukraine is capable of resisting that. But it would be prudent for Ukraine and Ukraine's friends in the West to sort of figure out how they would deal with some of those questions. You know, if Russia, for example, resorts to economic sanctions, are there things that they can do in terms of opening Western markets that might help compensate? But Ukraine has today probably the best chance it has to move to becoming a normal European country since the Orange Revolution, and I desperately hope that they do not miss that opportunity again.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Stephen Pfeiffer.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Pfeiffer, who's the director of the Brookings Institution's Arms Control Initiative, where he focuses on arms control, Ukraine, and Russia. He served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs, U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, and Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia on the National Security Council. In addition to Kyiv, he had postings in London, Moscow, Geneva, and Warsaw, as well as on the National Security Council. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking with a Ukrainian scholar about rebooting Ukraine.